look on your bookshelf and know that those who have come before you were in the exact same place that you were, thinking, can I do this? Is this idea worthy? Is it something someone will read? And the answer is yes.
Unconventional Life, the show where I interview successful entrepreneurs, creatives, and thought leaders on how they earn their living in non-traditional ways. We will explore how they took the path less traveled, what their revenue model looks like, and why they are prioritizing their passion over their paycheck. I'm your host, Jewel Schroeder. Unconventional Life. Welcome. This is your host, Jewel Schroeder, tuning in today from Boulder, Colorado. Today's guest is joining me from Santa Monica, California. I've got the lovely Susan Ruth in the house. Susan, are you ready to take us down the path less traveled?
I am ready. Let's do it.
Really excited to have this woman on the show. She is a songwriter. She's an artist, a podcaster, now coming into the world of acting, a short film creator, such a multi-passionate, expressive human being. And I know a mutual friend and former guest, Jeffrey Madoff, got us introduced. And I know he's been on your podcast.
He has. Yeah, I love Jeff. He's the best.
Yeah, so good. And I'm excited to be on your show as well. And for those of you who don't know, Susan, you know, I know your career started in Nashville. You spent 13 years as a songwriter. You've released 4 albums. You've moved to LA. You've, you know, just sold 2 short films. Now coming into the world of acting, and you've had such a thriving career as an artist. You know, I know one of your paintings, for those on video, is right behind you. So Unconventional Life checks out on video. And I know between all of these different skills, you just have this beautiful blend and mission of bringing the human forward and really allowing who is the individual to come and to thrive in such a, you know, sister mission with the Unconventional Life. And so excited to have you on the show. So fill in any gaps I left out and give
Thank you for having me. Yeah. I mean, it's funny when people say, oh my gosh, you do all these different things. And I say, I do one thing, and that's storytelling. And that's, you know, connecting humans to each other. That's what I do with the art of storytelling. So with the podcast, with the painting, with the writing, with the music, it's all the same to me. It all lives in the same sphere.
Yeah. I'd love to talk about that theme for a second, because I'm very similar in that regard where, you know, music, I love real estate, I teach yoga, I do these events, like all the various things. And then from the outside, it seems like, you know, I remember one time someone was like, I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but your website's a bit ADD. You seem all over the place. And I was like, no, I'm really in the place. There's just a theme. And I've learned how to know what I'm really good at, what my superpower is in all of those different areas. And then I can effectively duplicate that and, you know, grow that new branch out of that core tree. Mm-hmm. So how do you relate to your work, and how have you been able to start to see the theme? Did that always come naturally to you, or were there points where you felt like you had to compartmentalize parts of yourself, or any insight of your process around that?
I think as a kid, I was definitely the weird one that got a bit bullied, things like that, who was unsure of their voice, but still knew there was a voice in there. And so music was the first path. Music was the first path to express an unheard feeling. And then from singing, that turned into, well, how do I express this now on the paper? So that turned into songwriting. And from there, I think it blossomed. I didn't know I could paint until one day I woke up and I thought, I wonder if I could paint. And there was such a freedom in it, and people started buying them. So that seemed like a great connection. But it's funny, because even though I do see how they are all interlaced, when I go to write a song, I'm very present. I'm very focused. You know, I'm telling a story. They're like little mini movies. But with painting, I let go. I'll put music on, all different kinds, you know, whatever it is, not my own. That'd be weird. And then I just let go. I don't have a plan. I don't have a sketch, nothing. It's just fully from the ether place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. But also a voice, you know, they're also... I don't know about you, but when you create something, for me, when I create something, I know that it doesn't really belong to me, if that makes sense.
100%. I view it, for me, I relate to it as like it's coming through. Like I'm just the vessel for how this thing gets carried out. And the best thing I can do is get out of the way and make the vessel as strong as it can, such that the transmission can, you know, in the purest form.
Perfectly said. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because I mean, all the ideas, all the stories, that's why when you go to the movies, you'll see three movies that are basically the same movie. It's not like they all stole from each other. It's just all that stuff is floating all around us. And if you ignore that inspiration, if you ignore that little voice saying, put this down or paint this out or write this or whatever, it'll just float on to the next person.
Yep.
It wants to be heard. It wants to come alive.
Yeah, I love that point that you bring up, and I relate to that so much. And I feel like literally, if we look at like unity consciousness, or we're one collective consciousness of what is wanting to happen, and you can see that in the world. I think the world is such a holograph, whether you love what's happening, hate what's happening, agree, all of the spectrum of it. It's a hive, it's a brain. And the things that we get tapped with our own vision, with our own initiative, sometimes it feels heavy. Like, it's like, how am I to be the one that can move this idea forward? But when you look at it with that lightness and that play of like, okay, I'm tapped. I'm either going to answer the call, or like that next person, it's going to pass through that thing wants to birth itself, and you get to throttle, you know, when you're available and when you're not, but it allows, in my opinion, freedom of creation, which I think the best work comes from that place.
Absolutely. I agree 100% with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, you know, storytelling, like you mentioned in the introduction, is such an important part for you. And I'd love for you to share with the listeners, how do you relate to storytelling, and how have you come into your own relationship with that in such a way that some of the listeners who might be in their own inquiry, you know, can inspire from it?
Well, if it's about writing a story specifically and literally, I would say, look on your bookshelf and know that those who have come before you were in the exact same place that you were, thinking, can I do this? Is this idea worthy? Is it something someone will read? And the answer is yes, absolutely. And the good news is, even if it's one or two people that pick up whatever you've written, that you've changed the whole world in that moment. I don't know that people really grasp that. Even as you said, with the collective and how we are all in this hive, therefore one is everything. One is infinite. Yeah. I think we think a lot of times that we know, oh, what can our one voice do? But it's everything. It does everything.
Yeah. Beautiful reminder. And this like bout of what feels like separation sometimes. And, you know, I remember I had a near-death experience that many of our listeners have heard me talk about in 2015, a wakeboarding accident, and came out of the MRI in the hospital, and they thought my neck was broken. They thought I had been paralyzed. And there was this white figure that approached me, six black shadow council member conversation of, Jules, you have more work to do in the world. Do you want to do it? And they thought, you know, my neck was broken, I might have been paralyzed. And I just remember saying, yes, as long as I don't come back as a vegetable. And in that next moment, I was zapped back into my body. I felt this energy forge my neck back together and shoot down my spine. And the moment that I woke up, everything shifted. And it was really the start of life being created through me and the completion of life being driven by me. And it took a whole new orientation. You know, but for so long before, it was like I'd watch all these amazing things happening around me, and I would feel like separate from them, like, oh, it's so great for them. Or I would feel jealous, or I would feel comparison, or I'm not enough. And then after that, I started recognizing like it is all the source. And the more I actively include myself of like, oh, all this money's floating around me. Hell yeah. It's because that's all available in my field too.
Yeah.
All success is floating around me. That's the water that I'm in. And I think as we move through our journey, and you said it beautifully, sometimes we forget that. And I think it just becomes this initiative of like, okay, I'm going to actively like claim this again and again and again without expectation and with just total, you know, trust. And, you know,
it's hard to believe. It's hard to have faith in the idea that the universe is there to lift you up. And you can call the universe whatever you want. You can call it, you know, molecules, you can call it God, you can call it the flow, whatever it is to you, it's rooting for you. And I think we do get caught up in the dark stuff. We've all had our trials and tribulations and thinking like, that's it. We're never getting out to the other side of this, but you can, it's not only looking for the light, but also knowing you're the light.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
I've died too, by the way.
I figured you might have. I was watching you on the street.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
I mean, and I talk about this a lot on my show on Hey Human, but I drowned when I was 3, and then I died on the operating table in my 20s. And I remember, I don't really remember the first one. My body does, I don't. And then the second one, I remember the whole thing, and I stepped outside of myself, and I was an observer. I didn't talk to anyone because I knew when I stepped out that I was getting right back in, but that I had agreed to the moment, and that one of the people in the room was supposed to be learning something, and that we had all agreed to that, and that I was going to check out and then check back in like a library card. That's exactly what happened, you know? So, yeah.
Wow. Tell us, slow that moment down a little bit, because I know the more I talk about my story, I find people are really fascinated. I've also become really fascinated. The amount of, like, I feel like I'm a magnet for near-death experiences now. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Yes, in fact, I was at a Christmas thing right before the pandemic. I was sitting at a Christmas party, and I didn't know anybody at this party, and I went, and I was sitting at this table with 3 or 4 other people who knew each other, and I thought, well, I'll just start talking. And I noticed that none of them were wearing watches. Which in a big group, that's not normal, really. I know everybody's got their watch on their, or the clock on their phone, but still people wear watches. Mm-hmm. So I looked around the table. I said, by a chance, because I don't wear a watch because they don't work. I break watches all the time because, and I read that since that it's when you've died and come back that the electronics go wonky around you a lot and that you can't wear watches, batteries drain, like my phone battery drains like crazy. Anyway, I'm sitting at this table and I look around and nobody's wearing a watch. And I just thought, what the heck? I mean, that'll be a conversation starter. So I said, by any chance, if any of you died, every single one of them had a near-death experience. And then I said, is that why you don't wear a watch? And every single one was like, oh, can't wear a watch. They break or the battery dies or whatever. So crazy.
Oh my God. And it makes so much sense because the current, like I like to say, it was like, I was running at like a 10 volt battery. And then I got supercharged to like 1,000 volt battery after. And my body had to learn how to hold the amount of energy, the volume of energy coming through. And that's like a whole nother podcast, but I'm curious, how has that been for you? And how has it been like being back? And I know I have my own, in some ways it's like deep apathy and also profound joy and then empty and meaninglessness. And it's like the whole cocktail.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's exactly right. Part of it is like, oh, what's the point? It's all just this weird game that we're all playing and we step in and out of characters. Like we're, you know, on a great stage. And then part of it is like, okay, well, I came back for a reason, so I better get to it and do my work. Also, it makes you, I don't know about you, it makes me, I shouldn't know, I do that. I'm like, it makes you, like, no, it makes me lonesome. Like, there's a loneliness that comes with it. Even when you have partners or, you know, dear friends or family or people that you love, like you said, it's as if something has changed in you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And for me, I remember the connection of being on the other side, and it was like the most profound love, I'll just call it that, in terms of a frequency that I've never felt on this earth. And not that I haven't felt beautiful things on this earth, but it was of a different place.
Yeah.
And after touching that for a long time, it was like nothing else, you know, like, what is the point? I'm like, you know, for a lot of times I was like, can I just be done? Can I just like do the work I got to do and like get out of here? And yeah. I've had to learn how to really take joy in the humanity and to recognize like in the patience of slowing down. And I know, you know, even why you started the Hey Human podcast and even the story behind that. And I'm, you know, don't know if that's exactly related to what we're talking about. I imagine there might be part related in a different way, maybe, but I'd love for you, A, to talk about what started the Hey Human podcast. And if you want to, yes, say anything back to what I just said.
Yeah. And to what you just said, the closest thing that I've come to the feeling you're talking about is dog. Or animals in general, probably, but certainly dog, the pure, delightful, loving, no requirement, just being love of a dog. I experienced that. My dog passed away a few years back, but I've never felt such pain in my life as when he was ripped from me. You know what I mean? It's like this, and people always say, oh, it's just a dog. It's like, no, dogs are perfect. Mm-hmm. They really are. And they teach you so much about how to love and how to be unconditional and how to be, you know, a dog. You can not, I would never do this, but a person could treat a dog poorly and it would still come back and say, I love you. And I think there's a lesson in that about the world at large, because this world will kick the crap out of you. And you have to keep getting in the ring saying, I love you. What's next? And it's the same thing that Gandhi said and Christ said, and, you know, all this stuff. Here, you want to hit me on this cheek? Here's another cheek. And you just keep doing it until people start to wake up themselves. It's like being a beacon of love and light, and sometimes in a bad mood or whatever, but just reminding people who they are, which I think that we're all, and this time I'll speak in the universal, we're all asleep until we're not. And that sleep is that self-loathing and that despair and that forgetting that we are connected and all that stuff, yeah. You know? So with Hey Human, I started it because I was really feeling like we had lost the plot as a humanity. And it was, there were a couple of mass shootings in a row and I was devastated. It hit me just really hard of how terrible humans can be to each other. We're seeing that again and again and again with stupid wars and occupations and, you know, all this. And child abuse and animal abuse is just, what is happening? And talk about losing the plot. And I was on the phone with my dad and I was going to the grocery store and I was just sobbing, really sobbing. And I said to him, I don't know what are we supposed to do? We've lost our humanity. And he said, you know, you can't give up hope. And I thought, yeah, I can. It's pretty easy to do. And I hung up with him and cleaned up my eyes and went into the grocery store. And I had this very surreal, I call them God winks, whether or not, you know, I'm not religious, you know, I'm spiritual for sure, but I call them God winks. And
It became God after my near-death experience for me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what else to call it. I mean, I call it the God, the universe, science, you know, we're all star stuff. Yes. All the things to me are the same. Everybody wants to separate it into their own little private piles to feel better about themselves or to other someone else, but it's all the same to me. Anyway, so I'm in the store and just beautiful interactions with my fellow humans, and got into my car and I thought, you know, it makes me emotional every time I think about it. I'm like, you know, there's something I can do personally. Like I have a purpose, and my purpose is to remind people who they are and how connected we are. And that's what begat Hey Human. And so I set out to talk to all different kinds of people, whether I agreed with them or not. I've interviewed murderers. I've interviewed terrible people. I've interviewed inspirational, lovely, beautiful people. And in all of them, there is a current that runs, because I've said this a million times before, I can't have a conversation with a murderer until I acknowledge that I too could murder. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the show is about. It's about humanity, just the real of the real. It's not, what have you got to pitch, or what do you, it's just, who are you? Why are you? Where are you going? What inspires you? What's your human? You know, it's changed me. I mean, it's changed me beyond measure, this show. And it's a lot of work because it's just a one woman army. I do it all, but talk about a gift.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, you know, you started it, what, back in 2016 or mm-hmm. so, which mm-hmm. is right when Unconventional Life also started, right at the very beginning of 2016, the OG podcast.
Yeah, yeah, we're some of the early ones, right?
Yeah, when I remember back then, people were like, oh, podcasting is so like flooded, like, I don't know. And then now here we are in 2022, and I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know from your show, you've built a lot of traction, a big audience around it. And more importantly, like you said, the humanity that's come for it. And I always like to say, I started Unconventional Life because I wanted more examples. I couldn't point to people back then that were doing all of it, that could make money, but also be a great, you know, partner and have great lifestyle and lifestyle design and well-being and impact and all the things. And so this became the end conversation, I like to say, per my mission or for permission. And that, you know, really has also changed me so much. And you know, I think for our listeners that really, like you said, in that grocery store, the conversation with your dad, you're like, I can do something about this. Like
one can be a lot.
Have power. And that really simple thought, I know so many people have again and again and again. And then just getting that thought into the game, taking that first step, any advice that you can give about that in your own life or through the conversations that you've had and seen other people do that?
My biggest thing to say is that what you have to say is important. And you may feel small, you may feel insignificant, you may feel like your voice isn't a voice worth hearing, but I'm here to tell you that it is, because we're all important. We all have something to say. And it's scary. Taking the leap is scary. It is. But, you know, sit down for 5 minutes and work on the thing. And then tomorrow, try 10 minutes, you know, or next week, try 10 minutes. And if, you know, you wake up and you're like, oh, I can't do this today, don't do it. It's okay. We're so hard on ourselves. And when we do that, we put up little trap doors inside our mind castle, you know, and all then when we go to do the thing, we'd fall into the pit of despair or the alligators or whatever. Fear is a liar. It's a liar and it's manipulating you. And I know it's hard. I'm not discounting that, but, and there are sometimes mountains to climb, depression and financial burden, all that stuff. But I'll tell you this, if you want to be a painter, there's lots of stuff out in the world that you can, that people just throw away that can be a canvas. You can melt down M&Ms, which costs what, $1, and take that color. There's a prisoner in a prison that is, you know, made paintings and sold them to help pay back his victims. And, you know, he did it with, he did it on like scraps of paper and M&M candy coating. So if you believe it, you can create it. Nothing existed until everything existed. That's the thing. It's like, and the other beautiful thing is that if it hopefully empowers is the idea that we are, the whole of the universe is a closed system. Nothing is that hasn't always been, you know? So with that in mind, just think of it like, oh, I'm not doing something for the first time. I've done it millions of times over millions of years. Mm-hmm. You know, fear is a liar. Don't believe it. Just do it.
So good. Well, I know you've taken that advice again and again and again, you know, like we just said, you know, moving from Nashville to LA, selling 2 short films, now, you know, going, you know, having your career as an artist, now going into acting. And so tell us about your art and how you relate to creativity and, you know, anything that you can share about that process.
It's funny because I do look at different aspects of my art in different ways, right? Trust me, jumping into acting is terrifying. I don't know if I'm any good at it, but I'm going to keep doing it regardless because what have I got to lose? I mean, somebody may think I'm dumb or bad. Okay. That's their problem. It's not going to stick to me, you know, anymore. Maybe as a kid it would have, but not anymore. I don't know how to answer that question exactly because when I write a song, for example, I'm telling a story. It might not be my story. Maybe I'm sitting with an artist and I'm helping them to bring their story out, or I read something in the paper and I want to explore that idea. You know, that's more directed, for lack of a better word. And again, with painting or with painting, it's just free. It's just free thought, free flow. It's just letting whatever happen happens. With the screenwriting, I actually have a journal that I have the weirdest, well, I don't know about you. I don't know if this is to do with the death thing, but I have the wildest dreams. It's exhausting. I wake up in the morning, I'm like, okay, I just did. And now to this point, I'm like, is this the dream or is that the dream? Because that's way more stuff is going on over there. And I tried to write down, you know. Mm-hmm. And people talk about the 10 minute pages where you wake up in the morning, you write for 10 minutes. I don't do anything. I'll be like, let's do that for 3 weeks. And then I'll fall off and then I'll pick it up again. Just be gentle with yourself and let the story, like we were talking about, let the things move through you and come out and stop judging it. Just do it. It may be crap, but even like I've written thousands of songs. I started my career in Seattle. I made albums, moved to Nashville. In that process, I've written so many freaking songs. Are they all good? Definitely not. You know, there's some real winners in there, but there's also a lot of garbage, and it's okay. It's okay to have garbage. Write everything down. Keep notes. I mean, I'll pick up scraps of paper. I'll mine old songs I've written. You know, I'll paint over a painting. Don't be afraid. It's okay. Everything old is new. Everything that once was has always been. Just go for it.
Yeah, so good. I love that. And Unconventional Life Fair, Susan's got an album, All I Ever Wanted Was Everything, which is on iTunes. So go check that out. We'll put that in the show notes as well, just to get a little flavor. You have an amazing voice.
Thank you.
I love hearing that. And I love the perspective of it, because it is, if you like, don't give yourself the permission to create and the permission to suck, you never get to explore the range of who you are. Mm-hmm. And every time that it's like, you know, it's literally an inhale, exhale, where it's like the breath of life. And so it has to expand, but it has to contract in order to take a bigger breath, to take more space. So I love that. And we're just about towards the end of the show, but my last question that I always ask, you know, my guests is, when you think about the unconventional life, what does living the unconventional life mean to you? It's perfect. Right on time.
Truck just went zooming by.
Unconventional Lifers, thank you so much for being a fan of the show. If you are loving this episode, please share this conversation with a friend or someone you feel it may inspire. We would so love if you leave us a review on iTunes so this message can reach even more people. As we are about to jump back into the rapid fire round, enjoy the music that has been playing in the background off my newest album that I just released called Vancouver. 10 songs inspired by love, death, transformation, and freedom. You can listen more at JulesSchroederMusic.com and in the outro at the end of the episode.
What does living the unconventional life mean to me? It's a great question. I speak to everything we've said so far. I think that most people are terrified to take a first step. And so in some ways, the unconventional life is taking the first step to buck the status quo, to be okay as the odd man out, to be weird, to have a new idea that nobody's had before, to remake an old idea that a million people have had, but you see it in a different light. Unconventional to me is about being willing to be okay with somebody thinking, what? The greatest advice I ever got was from my friend Kathy McHugh, and she said, what other people think of you is none of your damn business. That was life-changing. I realized how much of my life before then I had spent worrying about what other people thought or how other people defined success or what would happen if a wrong note was sung. None of it matters. None of it. And even success doesn't matter, really, if you get down to it. It doesn't. It's all make-believe. It's all real and it's all make-believe. That's the thing. We live. It sounds very hippy-dippy, but we live in a world of gray, of mosaic, of, you know, pieces of things. And I think we get so bogged down in the idea that perfection is the goal, or success here is the goal. People like you and I, we keep moving the goalposts. So we never really attain the thing that we're heading for because we don't even know what it is. And that's okay too.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that even answered the question.
I hear it as being in the space of infinite creation, and it's being in the medium, really, again and again and again. I find the more I keep and put myself in the medium, whatever medium that is, the next step in the why and the truth come from being in the medium. And I find when I calibrate to truth, the capital T truth, it's inarguable. And I might not like it. And some of you listening right now, you might be hearing the truth in different areas of your life. And you're like, oh, that is not the right time. Oh, I don't want to do that. And that dial starts to get louder and louder and louder. And when it's time, the truth comes in and you might not like it, but you feel the resonance and things become still and you go, okay, here I go. And I know that's been a practice that I live my life by. And for me, that is so the unconventional life, only because someone said that was unconventional. And that's the other thing, right? Is like,
right.
the conventional life. What is the unconventional life? It is just our own context for how we create and how we show up. So yeah. I love that so much, Susan.
Yay. Thanks, Jules.
That want to check out Hey Human Podcast. I want to check out your art, check out your music, follow along, stay in touch. What's the best place for people to do all that?
So you can go to heyhumanpodcast.com for the podcast. You can go to iTunes, Stitcher, any of those places for the podcast. Just know that they only host 300 at a time. So if you want to go to back catalog of the show, go to the actual heyhumanpodcast.com and susanruth.com, art, music, interviews with me, that kind of stuff. They're all there. And I'm on social media, Susan Ruthism everywhere. SusanRuthism for all my social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. And then Hey Human Podcast has Instagram and Facebook. Oh my gosh, so much.
Well, we'll throw all those links at the website, unconventionallifeshow.com, in the show notes so you can check her out. And I will also be on her show at some point in the future. So yes. Go follow us over at Hey Human Podcast, because she has definitely got a great conversation going on, a real conversation going on. So
thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been my honor, and it's nice to meet a fellow dead gal.
With that, thanks so much, everyone. So good to have you on, and we'll be back with more soon.
Bye.
Bye.